He is immortal. Born in the Highlands of Scotland 400 years ago, he is not alone. There are others like him. Some good, some evil. For centuries, he has battled the forces of darkness, with holy ground his only refuge. He cannot die unless you take his head and with it his power. In the end, there can be only one. He is Duncan MacLeod, the Highlander.
And welcome into Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander, Season 3, Episode 5, Rite of Passage. And here to talk with you as we go through the seasons, I'm your host Travis, a.k.a. TV's Travis, and my co-host, the one, the only, Audie Norman. Audie, how you doing?
Doing all right, man. It's been a week or so.
Yeah. I know last week when we talked, you had just had to quarantine the kids from school. You've had your first tests come back negative?
No, we had first real PCR tests and one kid tested positive.
That's right.
Dating this whole time. We went back today to do a follow-up PCR test because it's been the whatever 5 days the school recommends us to test after. So we did rapid tests today. We did rapid tests Sunday. Those all came back negative, so we're just hoping for that last PCR to come negative and we'll breathe a little easier.
Yeah, in the house, no anyway. Doubt. Also, on top of that, you're in the South. How was the weather this past week? Did you get much effect from Hurricane whatever its name was?
Ida. Yeah, we didn't get much of Ida here. We got some rain yesterday. We got a little bit of rain today. We didn't feel it too much. It had dissipated enough that we just got some general rain showers and not much, so we were low.
Boy, that stuff is scary though. I saw a video of a building that had a metal roof, and the metal roof just peeled off it like a tuna can. And it wasn't like a small building either. This was like, you know, probably a couple thousand square foot building, and that roof just came off like a can of tuna and went flying in the wind. And that's the stuff that scares me.
Katrina hit similar area however long ago, and that was a Cat 3 when it hit. This one was Cat 4 when it made landfall. So I think most of what I saw was just that the wind was so significant this time.
Yep.
So, but it looks like a bunch of the levees and stuff are holding a lot better this time around. So
it did seem like the flooding wasn't nearly as bad, but that power, something happened with power, and power was a real problem. I mean, look, these storms are no joke. So if you happen to be in a place where a hurricane is coming, a little bit of advice on dealing with a hurricane. Leave. Just get out of there. Just don't be there when the hurricane gets there, if at all possible. I understand that there are times where it's not feasible and you have to hunker down. But honestly, if you can get out, get out. But in the land of immortals, we had some fun stuff to talk about. So, you know, we'll get off of current events and the heavy stuff and go back on to our fantasy world of sword fighting immortals. And this week's episode was an episode.
Yes, it was.
Now, before we get too deep into it, I did rifle through and I found a short one. It's not a very long Watcher Chronicle this week. But nice. there still was a tape, so here it is.
All right.
October 24th, 1994. Looks like we have a new immortal on our hands. A young girl was pronounced dead at the hospital after a car accident this afternoon, and then her body ends up missing. And Duncan MacLeod just so happened to be at the hospital, and friends of the girl's adopted parents, no less. Seems he must have known something about her. I wonder how he could tell she would become an immortal. There has to be a way to know.
So Duncan is visiting a friend of his who's telling him about his kind of troubled teenage daughter. And Duncan has apparently been friends with this guy for a while. He's known the daughter. She shows up at the house in typical teenager mood, right? She comes flying up in the car, gets out. She's all standoffish with her parents. You know, where were you last night? Oh, I was just out kind of stuff. Not out of the ordinary. And then she gets upset and takes off. And Duncan's like, I'll go after her. Well, before he has a chance to catch up with her, she gets into a bit of a car accident. She goes off a cliff, and next thing we see is she is in the hospital with Dr. Ann Lindsay trying to save her life, and nope.
Yep.
Does not work. She is pronounced dead at the hospital. So her parents, being very upset, beside themselves with grief, Duncan sends them home and then quickly scampers off to the morgue to collect her because she is now an immortal. And somehow he knew that she would be an immortal, which does raise some questions that I'm going to have.
Yes.
One thing I did notice, too, is when she shows up at the house, there's very small underpinnings of the tingle noise in the soundtrack, which I thought was interesting as well. Little tiny bit of foreshadowing there. So Duncan, Duncan sneaks her out of the hospital, runs into Dr. Ann as well. She's wondering why he's in the morgue. He comes up with a cheese ball story that she sort of buys. And then he gets Michelle and they go back to the dojo. And he explains to her kind of what's going on. We assume he explained it to her because it was done in the cutaway. She reacts interestingly, I would say. She's not quite sure how to take it at first, but then she's super excited about it in a very 18-year-old party girl type of way. You know, very much like the, oh, I can drink whatever I want. I can do any of the drugs that I want. I think the line she uses is the whole candy store, which I thought was a little something. So kind of typical drugs, excess, teen type stuff, which I can buy that a little bit, the way that they're setting her up, kind of. But again, there's questions I have, which we'll get into. So Duncan is trying to help her out. But then her adopted father calls saying, hey, the hospital's saying her body is missing. So he's asked to go help find her, right? So he leaves her in the loft and says, don't open the door for anyone. I'll be back later. Not completely explaining to her what it's like to be an immortal and just taking off. So while Duncan is away...
You need to explain things to
her. Yeah, yeah. So Duncan is away, and while she's at the loft by herself, she feels the presence of another immortal. And this was kind of a cool thing that they did, because I liked her experience of feeling that for the first time and kind of that overwhelming sensory stuff. And she looks outside and she sees a man in the alley. So she goes out to meet him, and he is another immortal by the name of Axel. And Axel immediately starts playing on and preying on kind of her teenage angst and rebellion and need to feel like a grown woman.
At least when he hears her voice, like up until that point, he's ready to take a head. Well, he hears her voice. He's like, oh.
That's true. Because he's there for Duncan, is what I gather. And wasn't expecting her to kind of come out of the loft. But anyway, so he starts playing on that, and then she's not 100% buying it because she's still very confused and wants to, you know, listen to Duncan and all of that. So he kind of is like, well, look, if you want to find me, you'll feel me, and then leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a lot of kind of back and forth with Duncan and Michelle as Duncan is trying to explain to her what's going on and the rules about it and her being the rebellious teenager and kind of trying to fight against it. At one point, Duncan goes to her funeral, which is just her parents in an empty coffin and a priest and Duncan. And Michelle is there at the cemetery as well as Axel. Axel comes up to her, keeps trying to kind of plant the seeds and seduce her a little bit. And her resolve is cracking somewhat. But then Duncan arrives, kind of sees Axel. We get a flashback. And then the rest of the episode is a lot of that kind of the interplay between Duncan and Michelle, and she ends up taking off because she can't stand him being, you know, a dad to her, even though she has a breakdown moment in the dojo where Craig, her adopted father, shows up to talk to Duncan. He blames himself for her death. He feels like he drove her to taking off, and she overhears the conversation that Craig and Duncan have and feels terrible about it, but then immediately tries like macking on Duncan, which was a little weird. But eventually,
a little bit.
Yeah, Duncan kind of realizes, all right, this isn't going to work. I'm not the person to be teaching you this, even though I've been around you for a long time. Like, I need reinforcement. So he's going to take her to a friend, is all he says. We can kind of connect the dots, but on the way there, she gets upset again and leaves, runs off on him, takes off on a bike with somebody, and goes to Axel. So how she knew where to go, whatever. But then she calls Duncan to apologize for leaving, but to tell him that she's going to stay with Axel. And then Axel grabs a phone from her and is like, hey, Duncan, we're, you know, tells him exactly where they are, because that's his whole point in all of this, is he just wants Duncan's head.
Mm-hmm.
And he's essentially using Michelle as a way to get to Duncan, but also to have another one of his young females, female immortals that he, you know, takes around with him and has as his arm candy until they're of no use to him. So it's sort of his MO. Duncan arrives. There's a brief conversation between the three of them that actually I really liked a line from Duncan in that, where he tells her, don't listen to him, don't listen to me, listen to yourself. That was cool. That was like a really well done moment. And then Duncan and Axel have it out. Duncan comes out victorious, and we find out that the friend that Duncan was taking her to was Amanda. We end the episode with Amanda and Michelle taking off so that Amanda can teach her. And Duncan, I love the moments too at the end with Duncan and Amanda, where Michelle's like, so have you two ever, and Duncan's like, that's none of your business. And but you know Amanda's immediately gonna dish on him. And
right.
And what I like about it is there's that moment where Duncan is he's like, oh, what have I done? And then he just kind of gets that wistful smile, like, well, it's Amanda. I knew what I was doing the whole time. And Michelle is whisked away, never to be seen or heard from again.
Yep.
You mean I'm never going to turn 19?
We might get to see 1,000.
Oh, man.
So special guests this week, we had a couple. Gabrielle Miller as Michelle. Mm-hmm. So this isn't her first episode. She actually was in Epitaph for Tommy, which I completely forgot until I was reading about this one. So that was in second season. She was in, I think, one of the flashbacks, wasn't she? She played.
Yeah, Jess. She was a flashback with the girl that got killed in the middle of getting married.
Yep. So that was that episode. I thought she was okay. I didn't think she was great. But not necessarily her fault. I don't think her performance was particularly bad or particularly good, but I think the character as written was kind of all over the place.
I'm the same way. I thought she was fine. She did a good job with what she was given, but yeah, it was kind of like, does anybody writing staff know a teenager at all? At all?
I got a lot of feeling of early Richie.
Mm-hmm.
There was a good bit of that. Like, they just didn't quite know exactly the idea that, you know, a teenager doesn't know what they want and is wishy-washy and flighty and going in all these different directions. I get that, but this was like too an extreme and kind of too much.
Mm-hmm. It almost rubbed up to the line of being too much of a caricature of a teenager.
Yeah.
I don't think it crossed the line. It didn't, you know, when she was talking about the drugs and stuff, I was like, oh, really? Like, that's a little weird to just be out and talking about it like that with Duncan, who you probably never said a word of that to. Like, that was a little weird, but I, you know, it was such, she said it and moved on and didn't, you know, it wasn't a thing that I was like, okay, whatever. But yeah, a lot of her dialogue was just kind of like, really, really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there was that moment, which I kind of get if she's supposed to be the bad girl, rebellious one, to then want to start drinking and whatever. Thinking she can get away with any of it. I get that, but you're right. It is a little weird to say in front of Duncan. There's also like the weird kind of schoolgirl crush that she apparently has on Duncan, but he never noticed, I guess, because he never planned for that. And It's weird. Both my favorite and least favorite moments with her in this episode are in the same scene. And it's the scene with, it's that scene with Craig when he shows up at the dojo to talk to Duncan, and Duncan hides her in the office real quick. Because from the moment he hides her in the office until Craig leaves and you're seeing all the emotion wash over her face, that's really powerful stuff. And her realizing how much Craig cared about her, mm-hmm. despite the fact that she was adopted, despite the fact of how she treated him and how she acted towards him, he cared about her. He just didn't, he couldn't relate to her. You know, that's not right. uncommon. And all of that, and then building up, and then her breakdown moment as, you know, she goes trying to run after him and Duncan stops her and she's crying in his arms. That was powerful. That was good emotion. But for her to do the 180 flip and immediately try to make out with Duncan and try to get with him felt really weird. I mean, aside from the creepy factor of like she's supposed to be 18 and just found out that Duncan is, you know, 400 years old. Like, that's weird enough as it is, but it was the mm-hmm. flip. It was the fact that it changed so quickly just felt weird and icky. I didn't like
that. If they had saved that for, like, the next scene where they're back up in the loft, I think it would have been a lot better mm-hmm. and not been so bad. But that weird 180 flip of, like, oh, my day, let's make out kind of thing was definitely... Ugh.
So it just tonally, like, she just shifted. And again, I get it. Like, teenagers are all over the place. I was a teenager. I remember that. But it felt more like somebody who doesn't remember being a teenager and isn't ever around them writing a character versus kind of knowing how they really would act. Even a 90s teenager. So that was just a little strange. But, you know, she played the part okay. Mm-hmm. And she didn't have to do any kind of physical stunt work because it wasn't written in for the character. So there's no problems there.
Right.
Anything like that.
I'll also say the way she acted too was, this is where I think the quality of her acting came in. You could have easily acted it as being just a ditzy teenager.
Mm-hmm.
But the times were, especially between her and Duncan and between Axel, like, the times that she was the way she looked, the way she was carrying the scene, it did not feel like a ditzy teenager. It felt like a teenager
mm-hmm.
who was trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
Wasn't quite sure of what, but still knows herself enough to be like, I don't trust you yet, dude.
Yeah. That was good. You know? Yeah, that was good stuff. Like, she didn't quite trust Axel, but ends up going to him anyway. Now, Axel was played by Rob Stewart, and his performance is much better than the material that he's given. Not that Axel is a bad character. Axel is just an undeveloped character. He's only there to serve as a foil. He's only there to give us an evil immortal. It would have been nice to have a little bit more of the backstory. We know that he and Duncan don't get along. I did like the whole, are you guys buddies? Well, we're acquaintances. Like, that's nice. There was some good interplay there. I loved... Honestly, for them only being on screen together for like two or three scenes, and they're very short, the chemistry between he and Adrian Paul was good. Like, they managed to give us the impression that these two men did not like each other.
Right.
Which was cool. You know, the whole like, I almost had you that time. Well, you cheated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was, I liked that. I just, we were missing any kind of background context. And that's just a trapping of a syndicated show.
Right.
We've talked about that quite a bit. So, but I thought his performance was pretty good, and he definitely had the look. You know, he had that suave look. He had the 90s hair. He had that that wonderful shirt he's wearing in the first scene in the alley. He gave the impression of this cool, suave, good-looking man about town, and I can buy him there. I can very easily buy him seducing and getting young women to kind of follow him. If they are all interested in men, he's like everything that they would want. And the fact that he can say, look, I can take you everywhere. I've got money. I've got things. We can just do whatever you want to do.
Yep.
So yeah, I thought he was good. again, his performance is better than what's written on the page.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of just wanted more of it.
Oh, yeah. Again, this is one of those things that Highlander does. They get great actors to, for the most part, elevate the material from what it is on the page. And he did a great job. He also did, and I know we'll talk about it later, he was a pretty dang good sword fighter, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one other person I did want to mention, just because I couldn't unsee it, and I want to see what you think. Craig, the adopted father of Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
Did he or did he not remind you of Colin Firth, like an American Colin Firth?
Yeah, a little bit. I definitely recognized him, and I couldn't put my finger on where. And then I looked at his IMDb page, and it's like, oh, he's all over the place. No wonder. He's been in something I've seen here and there. So, but yeah, I can see that for sure. Like,
for some reason, and not in everything, because I'm looking at his IMDb page, it doesn't remind me of Colin Firth, but in this episode, like, you could have put Colin Firth in that role, not at the time, because he would have been too young, but I don't know, it's just something about him just reminded me of that, and I couldn't unsee it after. Like, once there's, I made that connection, I was like, nope, that's all I'm seeing now is Colin Firth.
Yeah, there's some other character actor, I think around this time, that I was trying to think of that he reminded me of, too. I couldn't remember it.
Not sure. But yeah, decent work from the special guest. I wouldn't say anything earth-shattering or groundbreaking, but you know, solid.
Right.
I don't need another teacher.
Duncan MacLeod.
You're a friend of his?
We're acquainted.
So flashbacks are Boston, 1896. And Duncan, so it opens up, Duncan's at a party. There's a woman singing on the stairs. It's a real nice kind of white collar tux, black tie party. And Duncan sits down, and then he feels the presence of an immortal, and he looks over, and there's a young girl who looks around Michelle's age. She's probably early 20s. Comes up to Duncan and is trying to... First, it's sort of like that, well, we're in a public place. You can't do anything to me here. And then she's like trying to coax him up to her room, but then she sort of comes clean, like, hey, I need help. I need help. Somebody's chasing me, and I never learned how to fight. And I'm new. I'm young. And all this kind of stuff. So Duncan, being Duncan, says, all right, I'll help you.
Right.
I will meet you as soon as I can. And so she goes off to her room, and Duncan comes up to the room, and there she is laying on the bed waiting for him. And when he gets in there, then he feels another presence, and it's Axel. And Axel attacks him.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Well, I mean, let's back up a sec. When you say she's waiting for him... She is waiting for him in the bed.
Yes.
Which,
so yeah, and then
he's just like, no, that's not what we discussed.
And I like that because again, it's such a Duncan move, right? He shows up after already telling her no once. He shows up in the room and now she's in her nightgown waiting on the bed for him. He's like, wait a second, hold on. And so you know, like his alarm bells were going off at that point.
Sure.
So, yep, Axel jumps him from behind. They fight. But before Duncan can do anything, he knocks him off the balcony and he lands and there's witnesses. So Duncan's got to take off. But then we get a second moment with Axel and Sharon, and Axel's basically telling her, like, look, you were supposed to get him up. You're supposed to get his sword away from him. And kind of giving us the impression that, like, she's not quite on board with what he's got going on anymore, because then she goes back to Duncan again looking for help, but this time feels a little bit more legitimately trying to get away from Axel, like she's afraid of him now.
Right.
So Duncan, again being Duncan, says, all right, I will help you. I will get you out of here. I will get you to London. You know, I'll get you on a boat. I'll come back this afternoon and I'll help you. And so when he comes back, he walks in, and it's interesting to me that the whole hotel is completely empty when he comes back at 2 o'clock, because it's like two in the afternoon. But he comes walking in.
So nobody can see the quickening that's about to happen.
Yeah, because he walks in and there's a quickening upstairs. And I love, too, Duncan coming in still in a top hat and tails. And as soon as he sees the quickening, throws his cane and his top hat and runs upstairs. And he finds Sharon gone. And Axel is nowhere to be found. So overall, like the, it was a short flashback, but it served the purpose, which was to give us more background on Axel. It's really my only faults with it are my faults with the entire episode, which I'll kind of get into in my final thoughts. And that is just that I wanted more. Like there was just, I just needed more story.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the look of everything, I think the period of having it kind of late 1800s and Duncan's in Boston was cool. I did like Duncan definitely being Duncan and being like, all right, no, I'm not going to do this with you, but I'll help you.
Yeah.
And even though he's been duped by her once, is willing to help her a second time, legitimately.
Right.
You know, he's kind to a fault, I think is what it is.
Yeah, he is.
And it also was a pretty decent little sword fight for them, for as short as it was, going from the room out to the balcony. Nice piece of stunt work with the stuntman falling off that balcony and hitting the table below. Always appreciate stuff like that. So, no, it's a good flashback. We've had better, but we've had a lot worse. It serves the story, too.
Oh, yeah. By far. And the other interesting thing I noticed is, like, you talked about being a short flashback. We didn't get to this one until almost halfway through the episode. Like, most of the episodes this season, you know, we've had earlier almost started in a flashback. This is the first episode where it's taken us a while to get to there, which was fine. I mean, it works for the episode, but it was like that. Okay, interesting.
Not only that, but once again, the flashback came and they had to come out of the flashback, go to a commercial break, and come back and then go back into the flashback. So that's the second time we've seen that this season already in five episodes, right. Which I also think is kind of interesting that they do that.
And there was two times coming out of the flashbacks where their transitions were super well done. I was like, okay, that was very nice.
I love just the way, transitions.
Like Duncan in the past, and then it's, you don't realize it's Duncan present and going into the scene or whatever. It's like, okay, that was very well done.
Yeah, I really like that, how they framed him to where you couldn't see the ponytail, and because in the flashback, in the period piece, he doesn't have it. So you don't see it the way it's framed, and then when he turns and walks, because you're only getting him from the neck up, now it's suddenly him in the present. I liked the transitions were just top-notch in this episode. I definitely will give
it. What you're saying is, I could down every bottle here and it wouldn't kill me, right?
No, but you wish it did.
I mean, I could basically do whatever I wanted to. Speed smack the whole candy store.
You're getting the life you asked for.
Yes, Duncan, but this one never ends.
No Richie. No Joe. And Dr. Anne Lindsay is, she's part of the opening credits. She's in the episode, but not very much.
Not really.
They're still just kind of setting her up. Like, this is the, I think, third episode we've seen her in now. So, second or third episode, she's just sort of like, things seem to keep happening around the hospital. And I kind of like introducing a character that way. It's similar to what they did with Charlie, a little more drawn out. Like Charlie got introduced, and then a couple episodes later, Duncan's buying the dojo.
Right.
This is sort of, it's almost like they said, well, you know, that worked really well with Charlie, but let's stretch it out over a couple more episodes. And so I appreciate that. I think I wouldn't have her in the opening credits yet is the only thing.
Yeah, probably not.
Because it makes you feel like she should be in the episodes more, and it sort of also takes some of the intrigue out of it, but it's 90s TV. What are you going to do?
Right.
So it's a bummer not to have Richie and Joe. I think Richie would have helped this episode actually quite a bit with the young immortal, just becoming an immortal type stuff. Like there could have been a way to work Richie into this that would have made sense. It almost could have been more focused on having Richie there and her becoming the immortal and taking Axel completely out of it, might have worked. It's hard to say, but I do feel like there could have been a way to use Richie, in this episode, or Joe for that matter. But they're not in the episode, so that's fine. But Amanda does have a cameo appearance at the end. So that's kind of cool. I mean,
yeah,
it's always great to see Amanda. And I mean, she's on screen for what, like a minute? But she steals that scene completely, just with nothing more than a look. The look she gives Michelle when Michelle's like, so have you two ever And it's just that look alone is perfect. Like, Elizabeth Grayson just knows how to play Amanda. She knows that character through and through already. And it's great. So that was nice. When Duncan talks about, you know, I'm going to take you to a friend of mine and she can help you. Like, we know it's Amanda.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of secret there. But yeah, that was really cool. Overall, you know, there's not much to say for any of the kind of co-stars that would normally be along.
Funny thing I noticed is this is the episode that the actress who plays Dr. Anne Lindsay, Lisa Howard, her IMDb pick is from this episode.
Oh, really?
When she's in the ER trying to resuscitate Michelle.
Oh, yeah, like, it just is. With the great big needle.
The big needle.
You know, and
I was like, oh, we're here.
And Ace makes a good point, which is Richie could have been in this episode as, you know, sort of the proxy for Michelle and be like, look, I understand it's weird. It doesn't make any sense. I'm still figuring it out. It's only been like a year for me. Mm-hmm. Trust me, you want to listen to Duncan type of thing. Like, that could have been helpful with how flighty Michelle was and how hot and cold she kept running, to have Richie there to be like, I was just going through this. I know where you have been. For her to latch onto him, I think could have made for an interesting story to tell, as opposed to where they went, which was with Axel. But they didn't. Right. They didn't go that way, and that's fine. And then the fight. So we talked about the fight in the flashback and how it was pretty cool, but it was very short. The final fight was also pretty short. It did have a cool lead up that I did mention, and I want to say it again because I really like that line. Duncan, because the whole setup for this fight is cool. Duncan shows up. And Michelle sees him and is like, look, you're not going to get me to change my mind. And he pulls his sword out and she's like, you're here to kill me? And her reaction is pretty great.
You're going to do what? It's like, oh, I'm not here for you, girl.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not here for you. It's not for you. And then all you hear is Axel. It's for me. Like that, the reveal of that was pretty cool, even though you could see it coming a mile away. Like, I just like the way they staged it.
Right.
And then again, Duncan's line of don't listen to him and don't listen to me, listen to yourself. That's a Duncan line through and through. And had that been the version of Duncan that was teaching her the whole episode, she never would have ended up on that boat with Axel in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So he might be 400 years old, but he's not much of a teacher. So he's got some things to learn there.
He does keep sending everybody off.
He does. He does. He's not, he's a lone wolf. What can you say? But the fight itself between the two of them was pretty good. I think the Axel just, he could handle himself. You know, Rob Stewart knew what he was doing with a sword. He's physical.
Yep.
So he was a good physical match for Duncan. At one point, I would have liked the fight to go on longer. Because, again, it was well staged. They're both good. It just was over with too quickly. And I'm not sure if they had more and they just had to cut it for time or what.
Yeah, that's what it felt like, because I would have assumed that there would have been more fighting in the water there.
Mm-hmm.
Besides him, just the way he popped up, Duncan does his move and that's it. It's like, oh, that felt super rushed.
Yeah. Yeah, because they tumble, they get into the water, and that's it. It's over at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty quick. So, you know. I did like the quickening. I liked the giant piles of logs behind him catching on fire that you can clearly tell was just like some gas lines they ran in there and had flames shooting up. But, you know, it looked cool. There wasn't a whole lot of a story to tell with the fight, but it's sort of emblematic of what the character was too. Like, Axel and Duncan had a history, but we don't know it.
Right.
And the fight, you can see that history, but we still don't know, and we don't get enough to kind of figure out more about these two men. And what drives them to not like each other. Because even in the flashback, Duncan already knew him, and they already had that history. So,
Because the whole focus of this episode was Michelle.
Yes.
And even Axel's backstory is to show us why he wants Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they're fighting, who do we keep cutting to? When the quickening happens, who do we cut to? Michelle learning this, reacting to it.
Yep, exactly. So not a bad fight, just too short.
Right.
Does that guy do anything to hurt you?
Do you think he would ever teach you to use a sword?
Michelle!
Don't listen to him. Don't listen to me. Listen to yourself.
So, final thoughts on Rite of Passage. Good. Not great.
Mm-hmm.
But good. So, one of the things I've talked about a lot, and part of it is, again, this is a 90s syndicated show. So, you're going to get this with this type of show and this type of storytelling. This was an episode that had too much packed into it, and I feel like would have benefited from just more time to tell the story and let the different elements breathe a little bit. This would have been, I almost feel like Highlander, the stories that they try to tell would benefit from, like, say, old style British television serials, where, like, old Doctor Who, where it would be 3 or 4 episode arc.
Right.
And they would tell one story over 4 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that kind of thing could benefit. And honestly, and we're going to come to this as we go on in the series, the high points of Highlander are when they are able to do that, when they can tell a 2 or 3 part story and spread it out, because there's a lot densely packed in here. If you spread this out over a couple of episodes, now we can spend an episode on just Michelle and Duncan and her becoming an immortal and him explaining how he knew she was an immortal before she died for the first time, because that's something new we haven't discussed prior.
Right.
Him dropping that casually, like, well, I knew since the moment I saw you.
Yeah.
And then a minute later, it also being revealed that he's known her since she was 11. So he's known she was going to become an immortal for 7 years, but never said a thing to anybody. Meanwhile, he somewhat acted surprised when Richie became an immortal. To an extent, like, they sort of tease that in the first episode, and it sort of was a little bit of a reveal, but, like, it was never one of those things where we knew, okay, they can kind of feel pre-immortals.
Right. I feel like it's something they've never explained before now, and they waited till now to reveal that nugget, but it's a nugget they've been holding on to. Because you're right, they didn't say anything, but in the first episode, both him and Connor look at Richie and are like, what you gonna do about the boy?
Yeah.
He's like, I'll take care of him. Don't worry. And it's like, they know, they get it, they understand it, but we as an audience had no idea.
That's true. And the Watchers clearly don't know.
Right. But when you think about it now, you're like, oh, is that what they meant? Not that the writers probably knew that at the time either. But
yeah, it's
just
tough to say.
You know, there's enough there that you can think about it in the background and be like, oh, okay. That kind of makes sense why he kept Richie around.
Yeah.
Because why would you have kept Richie around, really?
Yeah, the early version of Richie, definitely.
But, you know, and part of that you could say was Richie, but Duncan would still have to be like, yeah, you could stick around. And then he drops that line here like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then thinking about that, I'm like, well, why didn't... You're right. I would have liked to seen this stretch out, or maybe just have Michelle stretched out.
Mm-hmm.
Keep Axel to this episode. Treat Michelle like we treated Richie. Have her be around for however long.
Yeah.
Starting to learn things. And then Duncan's like, okay, this isn't working.
Well, not only that, but we've never heard of Michelle or her father, Craig.
Yeah.
Prior to this episode. And they're supposed to be, I mean, if he's been around her for 7 years to the point where she knows him well enough, like, it just felt like, oh, yeah, by the way, you know, because did they know Tessa? You know, some sort of a connection in that first scene where, you know, even they say something like, oh, we're really sorry to hear about Tessa, you know, that kind of thing. So there's some kind of a connection because, like, I don't know. It's just, it felt like they just sort of showed up out of nowhere. And on top of that, since we are never going to see or hear from Michelle again, it's kind of a bummer.
Right.
But yeah, stretching that out, giving Michelle more time also would help, because then she can go through the different ups and downs she went through in this episode in ways that feel more realistic and feel more authentic.
And not crammed into one episode.
Yeah. And it does also give us, it would also give a chance to flesh out a little bit more of Axel. Because now he can be, you can have something with him kind of not really stalking her so much as, like, just kind of keeping an eye on things and sort of all that kind of stuff. Like, there's this was just one that felt like it really would have benefited from just giving it more room to breathe.
Sure.
Which is why I classify it as a good but not great episode, because there's definitely some seeds, some kernels of some really good stuff in there.
But yeah, it's still a good solid episode.
Sure. Yeah, it's not bad at all. Not nearly. I mean, we've seen bad. This is not that. Mm-hmm. Because again, it's well acted. What they gave us works. I just kind of mm-hmm. would have liked it to marinate a little bit longer and give us a little bit more.
Yeah.
There's a fast food burger. This isn't a gourmet burger. Now, next week's episode is one I don't know if you remember it or not. It's called Courage. And it's got, I know Richie is back, and it actually is a pretty good episode from my memory. So I'm kind of looking forward to the episode Courage.
Nice.
Dealing with immortal Brian Cullen, who was once the best swordsman in all of Europe.
Ooh.
Yeah. Some interesting stuff that they go through on this. I liked it quite a bit, so I'm excited to talk about that. And that's going to be next week's episode, which is episode 6 of season 3, Courage. Now, if you want to be like Ace or Danny Ora and hang out in our chat room while we're recording, we do record the show live on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. twitch.tv/TVsTravis. You can come hang out with Audie and I talk.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talk in between segments, not just about Highlander, unless that's usually the topic of discussion, but we'll go on about anything you want.
Sure.
So come hang out with us. You can find the show at anchor.fm/Let's Watch Highlander or anywhere that you get podcasts, Apple, Google. I think it's on Spotify, too. Wherever you like to find them, just search for Let's Watch Highlander and look for Audie's awesome artwork. he's doing fresh pieces of art for every episode this season, and this week's was another really good one. This week's was cool because you really captured the look of Axel well.
Good, I'm glad. It took me a while to figure out what the heck am I going to draw for this episode.
It's a tough one because it's like you could have done Michelle, you could have done, you know, you went with Axel, which I think was the smart choice because visually he's interesting to look at. Plus, he had that 90s, that feathered 90s hair, which is glorious. So yeah, that's anchor.fm/Let's Watch Highlander. And if you do listen to the show and you can leave us a rating and review on whatever platform, that makes the show more discoverable for people. So it's always great. And if you want to drop us a line and talk to us at all, we're both on Twitter, and that's where I'm most active. Twitter is at TV's Travis, or Audie, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me at oddlynormal1. With one spelled out.
All right. So we love to talk to everybody. I'll talk Highlander all the time. I got called the Highlander guy today during a Twitch stream, which made me laugh.
Nice.
So that's, yeah. So next week is Courage, episode 6. We're getting into, this is a good episode. We're coming close to the middle of the season now, which I know coming up there's a good one of those 2-3 story arcs that we've been talking about that we kind of want to see. So. Should be pretty cool. But yeah, so next week is episode 6, Courage, and until then, remember that there can be only one really well done car crash in this episode.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.